Hey everybody, welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the jam because it is not a meal plan service. It is a fresh, pre-measured ingredient delivery service. They make fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes appear at your door. Skip trips to the grocery store. Count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. I like HelloFresh for a couple of reasons. One, you can choose from super healthy cooking to delectable gourmet options to vegetarian options. There's something for everybody. The recipes are tested and designed by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure not just deliciousness, but also simplicity. I also like that they save me from wasting food. Like, whenever I want to try something new, I inevitably have to buy some big jar of spices or bigger container of ingredients than I need to make this one recipe, especially if it's just me and Hannah. If I say, HelloFresh, send me ingredients for meals for two, I have exactly the right number of ingredients to make these meals, and there's no food waste. Like, packaging waste, yeah, okay, packaging waste is bad, but to me, food waste is worse, because food waste, it could be feeding somebody, and you hate wasting that kind of stuff. You hate wasting money on it, and you hate the idea of throwing away food because you don't need it anymore. You don't want it to go bad. HelloFresh eliminates that. They offer 50 menu and market items to choose from every week, constantly rotating. You could pause it if you're going out of town or if you want to go out to dinner that week. And it's over 30% cheaper than shopping in grocery stores with pre-portioned ingredients that ensure you won't spend money on excess food that ends up going in the trash. I also like it because it allows me to learn new recipes. Like, choosing a new recipe from books or worse, the internet, it's hard. How do you know what you're feeling like? But with HelloFresh, they show you the photos, they give you the options, and then you make it, you keep that recipe in your repertoire for later if you want to go back to it. It's really good. I like HelloFresh a lot, and it saves me time. All the HelloFresh stuff I've made, it's never taken more than 40 minutes start to finish. It's really, really good. So go to HelloFresh.com/smokingtire14 and then use code smokingtire14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh.com/smokingtire14, code smokingtire14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. That's why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. We're also brought to you Long-Term Styles by Dylan Optic Sunglasses. Those amazing sunglasses you see me and Zach wearing in every single video. I was just at the Audrain Concours, and so many people wanted to try on my Dylan. Like, oh, those are the glasses. What are they like? I want to see what they're like. And when they see the matte finish lenses, they know there's immediately something different about them. But it's not just a different look. The glass is excellent. NIR technology, double polarizers in the lens. They're durable. They are really, really good at fighting glare, fighting bright light, and they have exceptional clarity, assembled in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they're customizable. You choose your frame, you choose your matte lens color, and you're almost guaranteed to not see someone else out there wearing the same pair of Dylans as yourself. If you go to thesmokingtire.com, we've got a page there that says Partners on it. Click on the Partners tab, and there's the Dylan banner. That'll take you there. They'll know we sent you over there, and they will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt for supporting the people who support us. So just go to thesmokingtire.com, click on that Partners tab in the Dylan banner, and get yourself a pair of Dylan Optic sunglasses. Hell, get yourself two. If you get yourself two, we'll send you two t-shirts. Get yourself three, we'll send you three t-shirts. That's how it works. Dylan Optic Sunglasses, the official eyewear of the Smoking Tire Podcast. Of course, we're also brought to you by Off the Record, OTR, baby. Don't buy into the ecosystem that begins when you get a ticket and ends when 8 years later it finally comes off your record and your insurance premiums go back down. Getting a ticket is more than just paying a fine. The state knows, the insurance company knows, and they're going to charge you for that over and over and over again every time you get an insurance premium bill. They're going to say you're a dangerous driver, a danger to society. Might be total bullshit, folks. So stay out of the system with Off the Record. Off the Record is not a lawyer. Off the Record is a service that connects you to qualified attorneys in all 50 states, covering 97% of the population of the United States. They have an incredible track record. And if they don't succeed in getting those points off your record by fighting that ticket for you, by appearing in court for you, that's right, you never have to go to court. You just call Off the Record. They handle it all for you. And if they don't get those points off the record, you don't pay them. It's that easy. It's a guarantee, right? And they have an extremely high success rate in terms of keeping those points off of your record, because it's more than just the fine of the ticket. It's a whole ecosystem that depends on you pleading guilty, not knowing that there's a better way. So go to offtherecord.com/TST or download the Off the Record app and use code TST10 to get 10% off all legal services booked through Off the Record. No matter how many times you use them, no matter how long you use them for, 10% off, TST10 on the app or offtherecord.com/TST. TST. Friends don't let friends plead guilty, folks. Don't plead guilty. Use Off the Record. Keep those points off your record. Keep yourself on the road. Keep your insurance premiums low. OTR. And of course, if you don't want to listen to me reading ads anymore, one of the best ways to do that is to join our Patreon. Become a patron over at patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast with three different levels of membership that allow you access to our live streams, an ad-free listening experience, and a special pro driver only 9th podcast a month. Unique content, ahead of time content. Also, you don't have to wait till Tuesday, Thursdays to get the show. You get the shows right after we're done recording them. They go straight up. Patrons get them first. And all you have to do to skip the ads, skip the line, and get access to our live stream, being able to ask us questions on the show, is become a patron at patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. All right, folks, on this episode of the show, I've got a new friend. Mr. Andrew Davidge is the CEO of Vintage Electric Bicycles. E-bikes are the new jam, and I've been riding my vintage electric bike for the past year and a half. I sent it back to them so they could fix the one thing I didn't like about it. They made it faster. That's right. I had the fastest e-bike on the market, and I was like, hey, guys, can you improve this somehow? And what I meant was some more upright handlebars so that my elbows didn't hurt, because it was kind of a cafe racer thing. And he goes, we can improve it. We have some handlebars for you, but we're also going to give it 40% more torque. So Andrew's here talking about the world of e-bikes, talking about what makes Vintage Electric crazy and the fastest e-bike that you can buy. And Andrew Davidge, the CEO of Vintage Electric, is today on the Smoking Tire Podcast. Welcome down, man. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I've really been a fan of that bike you guys gave me for like a year, and it's so like useful, but also super fun. And it's just interesting. I'm not surprised that the e-bike industry is doing as well as it is, because they're awesome. But what has your experience been like building e-bikes over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, when we started, it was really a passion project.
What year did you guys start?
Built the first bike in 2012.
Oh, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while.
And what was the first bike like?
It was probably had about a 10-mile range. Mm-hmm. Brakes sucked. And I really built it just to get around at the racetrack as a pit bike for myself.
Well, they rule for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, they're brilliant for that.
And really wanted to go to design school to get into transportation design. And everyone kept stopping me and saying, hey, can I get one? Can I get one? And at the time, I was doing graphics on race cars and race trailers to pay for my racing. And mm-hmm. And
what were you racing?
At that point, I was racing shifter carts.
Oh, cool.
Or 125cc race carts.
How old were you?
Right out of high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So got into it a little bit late, going up against the 15-year-olds.
Yeah, you weren't going to get into F1 starting at 18, for sure, yeah.
But I've always loved racing stuff, so.
But if you were doing that at 18 and you had a business opportunity that was like, you should just go straight into this instead of going to college.
That's what happened.
I mean, I don't like telling people to not go to college. College is great for a lot of people, but if you have an opportunity to make money doing something you really like at an industry that's on its way up, as opposed to getting yourself into debt,
Yeah.
Yeah. Who might argue?
We were a little early.
Yeah. A little early?
We were a little early.
12 is early.
Yeah.
That's early.
Yeah.
When did it hit?
You know what? Our first kind of break was, you probably know a guy named Gordon McCall. He throws the Wednesday night Jet Center party.
Yeah. The McCall, McCall Motorworks thing.
Yep.
Really great
guy.
At Pebble Beach, it's the Wednesday night deal. Yeah.
Really great guy. And at this point,
I don't know anything about him besides he hosts that party. What does he do?
The big thing is his party. But he's been down there, and a friend of mine who helped me get the company started. They used to do an event called Cars and Cigars, I believe. Uh-huh. I might be misspeaking, but
you gotta have it's gotta rhyme. Yep. It's gotta have C's. It's got caffeine and carburetors, cars and cigars.
They were way ahead of their time.
Donuts and whatever the fuck. Donuts and derelicts.
Donuts and derelicts,
I think, was the other one. Yeah.
So at this point he I'd already rented a little warehouse. My buddy was building flat track Harleys, and we were welding these bikes and putting them together, and we built two prototypes and went down, bought myself a suit, and went to this Wednesday night Jet Center party. And
With the bike.
Two first prototypes. This is in 2013. And, I hadn't really considered taking money. I just thought we were going to show them and it was going to be fun. And these old boys started ripping out their black cars.
Yeah, you went home with no bikes.
And we didn't have bikes. We'd only built two prototypes. So I actually excused myself from my little spot I was standing, went to the bathroom, the really nice portable ones, made a PayPal account, went back out there and took, 30, 35 orders that night.
Holy shit.
Which was a big deal for us.
Yeah. And then we were like, now we have to build 35 bikes.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. So went back to that little warehouse and got kind of a motley crew of friends together. And we started drilling frames out, welding them, driving them down five frames at a time to the powder coat shop. And this is really the infancy of electric technology. So,
did those first bikes, to build two prototypes and sell them to that crowd, they must have looked awesome. Do they look like the bike I've got, or do they look like just regular kind of e-bikes?
No, they look just very similar to the bike that you have.
So what your bikes, the one I have, which is called the Scrambler, right? It's, the battery pack is sort of styled to look almost like a V-twin motorcycle engine.
Yep.
The bikes have a real sort of either like a post-World War II Harley vibe, somewhere between that and like a cafe racer. It's not quite cafe because you're kind of leaned back a little more. It's got a little more of a rake, but it depends on your bars.
At that point, they were pretty far forward.
It was a cafe racer.
It was a full, the inspiration came from the old board track race bikes.
Right, yeah.
And I'd always loved those and just kind of idolized the guys that were racing those races.
Yeah.
So it was very drop-down position. And that was our first customer feedback was, looks cool, but this hurts my back.
Yeah. Yeah. The seniors, they can't ride that shit.
Yeah.
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 And so 35 orders in the first day. And then did you go, oh, shit, how do I build this at scale?
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't hit that. We basically lived in that warehouse and got those bikes out to our customers. And they were, patient early adopters. And then I met Jonathan Ward from Icon, and we did a collaboration with him. And
that's where I first saw your bike, was with John.
Yep, and he's great. And that was the first big, now it's not just 30 bikes, it's a couple hundred bikes that we have to build, still building them the same way. And then, after that, we kind of took a step back and said, we got to scale this thing somehow. And then we brought on a partner who had set up a lot of Trex manufacturing in overseas. And so we started building relationships with some of the best bicycle manufacturers in the world, really. And then started having these frames built completely to our specifications and having them fully assembled for us. So we weren't doing everything in-house.
Yeah. I actually, when you did the collaboration with John Ward of Icon, I thought at the time, because I didn't look more into it, that he had actually designed the bike for you. And it looked like he could have. I mean, it looked like his, his vibe, like the kind of thing that he would have drawn and come up with. What did he contribute to the collab of that bike? Because I don't remember exactly what it looked like.
Yeah, I think what he does best is just the finishes and the detail work.
Yeah.
So the first one, we had bison leather on the saddle. We got to use those really great powder coats that Icon does all their cars in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of paint and, just finish details. We were brushing all the crank arms instead of polishing them, and brass fittings and things like that. So it was a lot of just kind of paint and graphics for the collaboration. And
were they triple the price of the regular bone?
No, they were a little bit more, but we kept it in line.
Yeah,
and that just opened the doors up to a totally different, you know, customer base. Then it was a cool customer base that we were shipping those bikes to.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, when I ride mine, I get stopped by people because it doesn't look like anything else.
Yeah, it's not a good bike for introverts.
No, and it's you know, people like. I can see people like pointing at me when I go by because it looks so much different and because it's fucking fast. You know, I don't know what the regulations are surrounding it, but this thing is like 37 miles an hour fucking all day, really covering some ground.
Yeah,
it's super super fast.
Yeah, and the regulations are pretty simple. There's the bike with a throttle can legally go 20 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
And then we have the race mode key for the customer that's using it at the racetrack or on their private property.
Correct.
What racetrack would that be?
Look, you know, just to get around Laguna Seca.
No, yeah, it's a pit bike.
Got it.
You know, you got to use it as a pit bike. And sometimes you got to run some laps.
Yeah.
You know, the most fun I had at that whole shoot at like Chuck Walla, like. 6 months ago was fucking knee down on that fool's Grom. Like Grom laps at 100 degree day at Chuck Walla are like amazing. It was so brilliant.
Yeah.
This would be good for that too. Like scouting the track. Like, do you know if, I wonder if one lap of America, you know, one lap of America?
Uh huh.
It's like, for those who don't know, it's an event put on by Brock Yates Jr. In partnership with Tire Rack, and you do like 7 or 8 track days over a course of a week, and you drive really long distances from track to track, and you get there early in the morning, and you get 2 very short sessions, like 2 3-lap sessions to set a lap time. And so you're allowed to track walk, and you're allowed to have a bicycle. And some people put bike racks on their track car so that they can ride laps of the track. I haven't done it since the real introduction of e-bikes. I don't know if they allow that. But this would really allow you to get the lay of the land quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
How important was it for you to be like, listen, this thing needs to go really fast?
I think that everybody at the company, we all came from a racing background, whether it be bicycles, motorcycles, cars. So speed is really important to us. And it's what we want to ride. So when we build bikes, we build fast ones.
When I ride it on the bike path in Venice, it's like riding a MotoGP bike. It's just the differentials are when you go, I can make any move I want.
Yeah.
I can get around anybody.
And you haven't ridden your upgraded bike
and
yet.
I haven't even ridden the upgrade. Well, I called you guys because I was like, listen, I love this thing so much, but I like the old guys because I'm fucking broken. I was getting tendonitis in my elbows from riding it. And first you gave me an upgrade with the front suspension because the original one had no front suspension. So now I've got front suspension, which helped. And then you're like, oh, we've got new bars. Like we have beach cruiser bars so you can sit upright when your weight won't be resting on your elbows. Which you just brought it back, and they are perfect. I'm so excited. And then you were like, oh, by the way, we're going to make it faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the new shit?
I mean, that's a big thing for us is we always want to make sure that our new technology is backwards compatible. So if a customer calls us and say, hey, this isn't quite working for me, we always kind of have an upgrade solution. So with that battery pack, and it's going to be coming on our 2022 models, we upped the voltage to 72 volts from 48 volts,
mm-hmm.
and then we re-engineered the winding on the motor and upgraded some parts in the rear motor. And it's all around torque and acceleration. So the top speed is a little bit faster, but it's all about that acceleration that we can give to the customer.
Right, because it's sort of, for lack of a better term, gear limited to the top end, right?
Like yep.
you can only spin the motor so fast.
Yeah,
but if the bike was lacking anywhere, it was that 0 to 5, you know, pulling away from a red light kind of thing. Because in order to reach that top speed, you need, I don't know, not eighth mile, but like a couple hundred yards to really get to that top speed. Like you couldn't do a burnout, let's just say.
Yeah, so like the 5 to 30 mile an hour time, which
yeah.
is what our customers are really looking for, went from 10 seconds to 5.5 seconds.
Oh yeah, that's
with the new drivetrain. And a lot of our customers live in hilly areas.
Yeah.
we sell a lot of bikes in Indonesia. We sell bikes all over the world, and our customers live in hilly areas, and they want one of our bikes so they can ride into town and then get back to their house without breaking a sweat.
Do you have any like storage solutions? Like, do you have like baskets or saddlebags or anything?
Yeah, we have this really cool full CNC machined aluminum billet rear rack.
Oh, that's
with
cool.
These awesome leather inserts and then panniers that just click onto them.
That's cool.
And that's what a lot of our customers use.
Well, that's like what I like so much about my Vespa is not like A, that it's like a fun, like lightweight, low center of gravity, two-wheeled vehicle, but the cargo box on the back is like such a game changer. Like now I can go to the grocery store without, you know, carrying a backpack or whatever.
Yeah, and the panniers, I fit my whole week's groceries in them. I just bring them in as my reusable bags and fill it up and ride
home. That's them. Oh, yeah. They're like soft saddlebags.
Yep, exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I got to order. I'm going to order some of those. Make sure to keep that link up for later. I'm going to order a pair of those. Like, yeah. Oh, and there's the rack. That looks bitchin'.
Yeah, you can't. We're redoing the website right now, but you can't see the top plate. And the top plate is the prettiest part of the whole thing. But that top plate is CNC machined, and there's inserts.
Well, it's a nice looking rig, though. That's exciting. What is your, you know, you guys make both throttle bikes and pedal assist bikes. Yep. What's the take rate on one versus the other?
You know, the pandemic really helped sales on the pedal assist bikes. You know, people want to get that exercise, get out of the house. And it's really two different platforms. Do you want a motorcycle experience with the simplicity of owning a bicycle? Or do you want more of a bicycle experience that just amplified to help you get down the road? Both bikes are really powerful, though.
Yeah. I thought it was, I didn't think, because you lent me one of the pedal assist bikes, I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did. I did enjoy riding it.
Yeah.
I like the throttle bike more, but because if I really want to get exercise, I'll just like ride my regular bike. But your bike's about going further. For me, it's about going further than I would want to ride a regular bike. And also, like, to get here from my house in Venice, I can ride bike path like 90% of the way.
Yep.
But like, I don't always want to be like sweaty when I get here. Like, I don't always want that to be my workout. So like, I could have like a beautiful, relaxing, fun commute on the bike path away from cars on my vintage electric bike. And I can do it pretty quick. Like, I could do it in almost the same speed as a car if there was traffic. And I'm not, you know, sweaty when I get there because I haven't been working out.
Yeah.
And it's great.
And both platforms kind of offer that. But if I want a little bit of a workout, I'll ride one of the cafes into work and then ride as fast as I can in level 5, not breaking a sweat. And then I bump it down to level 1 on the way home, get a little bit of a workout.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah. What's your commute?
I get to ride a bike path all the way to
do
work.
You?
Yeah, I live in San Jose, so I live downtown San Jose, and my shop's right next to the airport. So there's just this awesome path. And that was kind of the aha moment when I built the first bike. Was I've driven fast cars, I've ride a lot of motorcycles, but it was just a completely different vehicle, and you don't have to be with traffic. So when I hop on my Roadster to come in, it's like riding Skyline or Highway 9 or a great riding road.
Yeah,
you're cornering,
you're
braking, you're accelerating. There's no traffic around you. It's just kind of like a cheat code to your city.
That's what it's like when I ride on the bike path to come here. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's so great. And like LA has like, there's obviously the main bike path that goes up and down to the beach, but we've also got the one that goes on the Bolana Creek that goes all the way from the beach deep into downtown Culver City. And you can get off at a variety of places. It's cool. Do you think that the infrastructure will change to accommodate as more people buy e-bikes and other last mile solutions?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most powerful things e-bikes have done is force cities to build more bicycle infrastructure. And during the pandemic, they, you know, to their credit, they went out and started building a lot more bicycle infrastructure, mostly just painting bike lanes green. But that still makes people feel more confident of like, oh, this is where I need to be.
Well, because it can be like a little sketchy, like. I was just this past weekend, I went to Newport, Rhode Island with my dad for the Audrain Concours, which was really fun. And Newport is like a great, cute little town. But the street, it's from like the 1700s. Mm-hmm. So the streets are really old. They have not created bicycle or e-bike, really, any lanes of any kind. And we took my old man's boat up there and we stayed on the boat. So I bought us fucking bird scooters.
Yeah.
Like the ones you can buy like on Amazon, like the 9Bots.
Yeah.
So I bought two of them, which was fucking genius. I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect, except like you know, he's 68. So I got to convince him to get on it, which was fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, the being where the cars are for someone that wasn't like, you know, kind of a daredevil was a little sketchy in certain places, you know. So having your own space makes a big difference for these types of vehicles.
Yeah. I think your own space. And also I think that's where we need to have a conversation around where what the speed is limited to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel safer riding with traffic than on a 9-bot scooter going 15 miles an hour.
Sure.
Even if the traffic is just going 30 next to you.
Yeah.
You know, so being able to ride with traffic, accelerate, not up to 60 mile an hour motorcycle speeds.
Oh my God, imagine like a fucking 9-bot doing like 38.
They started a race series.
Are they?
On those scooters, yeah.
They do have that? Can we find Bird Scooter Racing? I bet that's a real thing.
Yeah, we have an old velodrome next to our...
Segway National... What was that? Segway National Go-Kart Race? I'll scroll back up, Zach. That's a Segway 9-bot Go-Kart Pro Preview. What is that?
Oh, isn't I think it? It's a little like kids' kart.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think if you just type in like electric scooter racing.
I'm sure it's a thing.
I saw it on Jalopnik or something.
It must be a thing.
Yeah.
Well, I did a story on Jalopnik where I created a lap of and I tested all the different last mile solutions. But it was sort of a weird one because the rental ones anyway, the shared ones, they're all geofenced like differently.
Yeah.
At least they were at the time. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like there's some consistency with where the geofences go. I should probably redo it. Oh, here we go. The next generation. Oh, dude, look at this.
This is no joke.
Their track looks cool. It looks like the track looked almost like you ever see Starlight Express back in the day?
No.
It's an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical about trains.
Oh.
Like, you know, where anthropomorphized trains, like humans are on roller, and everyone's on roller skates.
Oh, yeah.
Remember this shit?
Yeah.
It was my shit when I was a little kid. And the track that they were just showing in their video looked like the train racing tracks.
Yeah, or it's like Spa or Circuit of the Americas or
something. E-Scooter Championship. Oh, and of course, they spelled it in the fucking most Silicon Valley way. E-S-K-O-O-T-R. Like, why the fuck couldn't you just spell that out?
They're giving us Silicon Valley kids a bad name.
Oh, my God. It's the most Silicon Valley thing ever. Like, I'm so glad your company isn't like VCTRY.
You know, we did have a legal dispute over the name.
Really?
Yeah.
With the motorcycle company?
No. Victory.
Sorry, Vintage Electric.
Yeah, it's another company owned Vintage, so
What other company?
I don't know. That's all I'll say.
You shouldn't be able to trademark the word vintage.
Yeah.
That's like Ford and GM just going to fucking battle because GM tried to trademark the word cruise. Blue cruise.
Yeah, And
to Ford's credit, they were like, it's not like Ford was like, no, we should trademark it. Ford was like, fucking nobody should be able to trademark cruise. Like, we've been using cruise control just colloquially for 25 years. Like,
yeah. Starting a company, you never think of these things like the legal side mm-hmm. and the lawyers and just everything that you have to watch out for. So when you get that first letter in the mail of like,
cease and desist. Yeah.
We ended up buying Vintage off of them.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Nice. That's an easy solution.
I was like,
I can solve this with money.
Yeah, exactly.
My father's in the retail business and he's had to take various companies through bankruptcy. And in some cases, they form new entities afterwards. And when they are operating globally, you know, my dad was running the company that was the parent company for Foot Locker, which is in 110 countries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so they needed to rename the company something that wasn't trademarked in any of these countries, which is fucking
impossible.
Hard. It's so hard.
Yeah.
They ended up, you know, one of the ways that they do it is they go to the Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are not using Latin words.
Interesting.
And so if you're looking for a word that's available globally, start with the Latin.
Yeah.
So they turned Woolworth. Remember Woolworths back in the day?
Yeah.
You know how it's not around anymore?
Uh-huh.
You can thank my father for that.
Really?
Woolworths is gone because of my dad. Yeah.
Huh.
Woolworths was the parent company that owned all the Foot Locker brands.
Oh, wow.
Foot Locker made money. Woolworth made fucking dick.
Yeah.
So it was losing like an insane amount of money, $100 million a year or something.
Jeez.
And so they had to shit can Woolworths, close all of it, and then they renamed the parent company Venator, which was Latin for hunter.
Wow.
It's a random ass word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand the trademark game is real.
It's interesting. It's just so, you think, okay, I want to build a great product. I want to take care of my customers. And then all this other stuff comes raining down on you and you get kind of a MBA in, oh shit, what are we about to do about this one?
You get an MBA in, oh shit, I like that.
Exactly. So like, how many bikes are you guys selling like a year now?
A couple thousand, you know,
it's a good business though.
Yeah.
These aren't cheap bikes.
No, and I think that racing cars or racing bikes or anything, it's all about, the racing part's really fun, but it's also the community that mm-hmm. you build. And so building bikes and building that community with our customers is more important than just going down to the bottom dollar and shipping out a ton of bikes. And
That's one strategy.
Yeah.
I met with Storm Saunders.
Yeah.
And that's his strategy.
Yeah.
His strategy is, I want as many people as possible on e-bikes. And in order to do that, I'm going to sell cheap ass e-bikes. And they're not low quality. They're fine. But they're quite inexpensive.
Yeah.
And that's his game. Whereas you are at the higher end, more luxurious end of the market. How important is it for you to be at that end of the market as opposed to the other end?
Yeah, I think for us, I also thank the Saunders because we have so many customers that are like, I bought a Saunders to see if I'd like an electric bike. I fell in love with it. Now I want to upgrade. Mm-hmm. So it's good for everyone, you know, the more bikes we can get out there. But for us, it's important to be at the high end of the market because for us, it's really important how we take care of the bikes after we make the sale. So always making sure we have warranty parts so we can keep these bikes on the road for a lifetime. That kind of allows us to do it. You know, mm-hmm. we're not, you know, a lot of these companies, and Saunders isn't one of them, but they'll import a container of electric bikes. They'll sell them all on Amazon. And they're not cheap. You know, it's still $2,500.
Yeah, yeah.
And then these customers purchase them, and then they can't get a battery or they can't get that tire size or there's multiple different things. So we kind of want to take a stand against that. And it's like, if we build a bike and we sell it to you, we're always going to have replacement parts to keep that bike on the road for a lifetime. And being in the premium segment allows us to do that.
Yeah. Well, your bike feels like a luxury product. I mean, the things that should be made of metal are fucking nice metal. The powder coating is really good. You know, that headlamp is really high quality. Disc, you know, really good disc brakes and the leather wrapping around the grips and on the seat and stuff is just really, it feels like a very premium item when you use it, you know, compared to even a medium to higher and, you know, more consumer grade bike.
Yeah. And if you look at our customers' garages, when you park one of our bike next to a GT2 RS,
yeah.
it better look good because
yeah, yeah.
If it's not, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. What is, even though the name of the company has the word vintage in it, have you considered doing a more modern looking one? I mean, or is it all about retro future with you guys?
Yeah, for me, it's mostly around timeless. Like, I want our bikes to always look good going into the future. And the vintage aesthetic is something I like, especially in motorcycles. But I think we're going to continue to develop that into a bit more of a modern era where I don't want the bikes to look like just a replica of a board track bike. I want them to continue to evolve and get more and more modern, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could also like retro future another bike from that period that wasn't a, you know, you could, if, you know, the Cafe Racer or
Penny Farthing?
Yeah.
Has anyone done an electric Penny Farthing before?
I don't know. I know a guy that built an electric unicycle, but not sure where
that's interesting. They have the ones that
a huge big wheel unicycle with a big motor in it.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
there's a dude who rolls a Penny Farthing on Venice. You know, he's a fucking weirdo.
It's a very
obviously.
LA thing to do.
Of course it is.
Venice thing.
It's fucking so silly. Well, Venice is a great place for bike spotting. You know, you got the essays with the fucking lowrider bikes. You know what I'm saying? They build the crazy
love it.
Long wheelbase. They got like 18 feet of chain, you know what I mean, going. The chrome wire wheels, you know, really cool stuff. And they've got guys' bikes with like big fucking stereos on them, bikes that tow matching trailers. Because we have the Light Parade. Have you seen the Light Parade?
I haven't seen that. I think we have something similar up north.
Every Sunday night, it's like an hour after sunset or so, hundreds of bikes covered in fucking lights, you know, kind of like in Burning Man kind of costumes.
Yeah, the Burning Man tour.
The Burning Man bike parade tour, yeah. And there's a dude who, like, very Mad Max, like, took a BMX and stacked, like, four BMX frames vertically.
Yeah.
And he rides from the top. There's all kinds, and the Penny Farthing's in there.
Yeah.
All kinds of weird shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that.
Yeah, I love all that stuff. A car culture too, you know.
Yeah.
It's like just all this crazy weird stuff and passion from people. It's cool and should be celebrated.
Zach, I haven't done Burning Man, but are there awesome e-bike art bikes at Burning Man?
Yes.
They allow that, right?
They do.
And they allow all e-bikes?
There's just a speed limit. But there are more. The double decker and other bikes, like the pedal ones, are really popular there.
Yeah.
Just because people want to ride around on a weird contraption.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I built a car for a guy that was out to Burning Man. Yeah, two seater. It had two of our drivetrains on it. And it was sweet when you drove it because it was like a infinitely variable differential. Because when you're coming around a corner, you roll on the throttle.
It had two throttles.
So you roll on the throttle for the outside wheel. And out there on the sill, you could
torque vectoring.
Yeah, you could actually like spin the whole thing around like a track. It was, and they put solar panels on the roof.
I want an all-wheel drive one. Sick. I want one with four fucking motors so you do axis
four
spins
throttles
out there. Yeah.
Play with like a piano.
Yeah, well, I want one on each foot and one on each hand. And fucking do that.
I know. I was in love with that thing. It was so cool. And my director of operations, Brian, was like, don't get any ideas. You're building one of those things.
Dude, that's fucking cool. Do you have like a secret prototype that is really, really fast?
We have some fast bikes.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten up 65, 70 miles an hour on
them.
That's
fucking sketchy.
And yeah, we have a really cool R&D lab. We got old mills, lathes, and that's kind of my happy place.
Yeah, I bet. How hands-on are you with the manufacturing? You made the prototypes by yourself, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that, you know, something I'm really grateful for was our metal shop at our high school. It's one of the largest metal shops in the United States.
Where was that?
In Los Gatos, California.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of right before you go over the hill to Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And my metal shop teacher, Mr. Muntz, he took all of us kids that weren't so great in school and taught us how to build stuff.
That's awesome.
We had a foundry, CNC machines, mills, lathes,
that's
welding
fucking
booths.
Rules. I went to the hoity-toityest fucking school, and we had like wood shop, and that was it. There was no fabricator. There was like,
but you guys probably had like derivatives trading.
They
class.
Did. Yeah, they did. There's like, here's how to fucking be a total piece of shit. Your father's about to crash the economy, and you can too.
Here's the trading analysis.
I went to school with everybody's kids, all the people who tanked the economy in 08. I went to school with all their kids.
Oh, boy.
And the Sackler's kids.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I went to school with the children of the worst people you can imagine. They were just like people's dads at the time.
Yeah.
But little did I know, 8 years later,
when the Netflix documentary comes out,
they're fucking all in it, dude.
Oh.
It's fucked up.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stick to just building stuff.
No, but how dope, though, that you had a foundry?
Yeah.
Like metal shop?
Castings. My buddy built off-road race truck, full tube chassis.
In high school?
In high school.
What?
built go-karts as our junior year projects.
And, see, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I think that just translated into, and I had the people to call when I was like, hey, we need to build these bikes.
Mm-hmm.
I had a group of friends that knew how to build stuff. And they've all gone on to do awesome things. Some of them are working at Joby Aviation, building electric helicopters or
electric helicopters.
Yeah, you should check out Joby Aviation.
How do you spell that?
J-O-B-I or J-O-B-Y?
Is it just like a drone that you can ride? Or is it an actual like single
images?
I want to see what this is about. Electric aerial ride sharing. Oh boy. But like, I can't, can you store enough energy in there to actually fly for a short trip? Holy fuck, look at this. It looks like an Osprey. The twin rotor?
A lot more than that.
Oh really? Oh, it's fucking, wow, look at this thing.
Yeah.
How many rotors is that, four?
I think
four or five?
Four or five.
Wow, okay. It looks like a torpedo-style helicopter body.
Yeah, and it's vertical takeoff, and then it flies like an airplane.
Wow.
All electric.
That is wild. Is that a real picture of it flying?
Yeah, it flies.
Have you been on this fucking thing?
No.
Dude, have they had a manned flight or does it fly remotely?
I'm not sure what I can say, but it flies.
Wow.
But yeah, I didn't think that if I look back at those metal shop days, it was a total turning point for my group of friends where they're all out building cool stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's a little bit different than most of the people in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
We're doing the harder path,
well,
I'll tell you that.
Most people in Silicon Valley aren't building physical products.
No.
Some are, but many are not.
And there's a demand for it. You know, if you're an engineer that knows how to work with your hands, you're getting jobs at Apple and Google. And, you know, that's what, you know, I'm busy with my company right now, but that's my passion. I want to go out there and tell kids that you can work with your hands. If you learn how to weld, if you learn how to run a CNC machine, you're going to have a job into the future. We still build stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily small widgets, but we build big buildings. And look at all the tradesmen that built this.
Dude, yeah, trust me, they make good money. And I know, I wrote the checks.
And the principals of schools aren't telling kids that this is a path for them.
Yeah.
You know? I just felt like I sucked at school and maybe I wasn't very smart. But my metal shop teacher taught me, no, work with your hands.
Yeah,
you'll be
yeah.
all right.
Yeah. And that last article I thought was very about that Joby thing who said that he was working with NASA to measure the noise footprint. That's always been my concern about the flying car concept.
Yep.
Or in the short range, the drones that you can ride. Because like a drone isn't quiet when it even a little fucking drone.
No,
you know, when
no.
you just think about these things flying all over all the time, like, oh, it's gonna be so loud. So I hope they figure that out so it's not.
I think they're under the decibel rating for Laguna Seca, which is pretty low.
If they are, that's awesome. That'll yeah. That'd be a great test.
Yeah.
Fly a lap of Laguna.
And see, if you get the big meatball flag.
Sound.
Yeah. My car was quiet. I loved that because I could go past the Viper ACR.
What are you running at Laguna?
I have in high school in the metal shop. I built a E36 track car.
Oh, cool.
And still have it to this day. Never going to sell
did?
It. Yeah.
Great.
Don't cool. have time. But and then I restored a 2002 TII.
Oh, cool.
But that got sold to fund bike parts.
Well, it happens.
Yeah.
There's more of them.
Yeah. There's yeah. plenty of those.
Yeah. Are you tempted to do an EV converted classic? Or not really?
No. I've gotten into off-road racing a bit lately, which mm-hmm. has been really fun. But
like side-by-sides?
No, it's a 4400 truck. We did Vegas to Reno and some
oh.
stuff.
Oh, down. That's a cool race.
And yeah, it was pretty cool. We flipped at mile 44.
Oh, so shit.
My neck's still a little sore.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's got a big old Croyer aluminum V8 in it. And
sounds
it's
so fun.
And I like electric vehicle conversions, but what I love about cars, a lot of that comes from shifting your own gears
sure.
and the sound and the smells. And so that's kind of the stance we're taking is keep your vintage Porsche in the garage, but ride something electric during the week, whether
that
be a Tesla or an e-bike or, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, I have a F-150 that it sits at my house or down at the shop, but all week I'm on an electric bike.
Yeah. I'm super, I have a Mach-E, a mm-hmm. Ford Mach-E that is great, great. For running around the city.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to go back to a internal combustion daily driver if I don't have to. But then I have like old cars.
Yeah.
You know, and it works. It's a good arrangement.
Yeah. And that's kind of my thing. And
I wouldn't be into an EV track car either. I don't like the, you know, at a track, I really associate my entry speed into a corner with, okay, go to third.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or whatever. And anytime I've tried to drive an EV really fast on a track, I find myself having to remember
the speed
and brake, you know, not downshifting and timing it based on that, but actually, okay, I have to brake to this number. And the trade-off is you can hear more tire.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear the tires, you know, a little bit better, but I'm not really that into it.
Yeah. I mean, I think electric vehicles are an amazing solution to fix big problems. But as far as the, I don't know, the fun stuff,
you know,
a track day, going on a canyon drive, I think that there still is a place for vehicles like that.
Sure.
You know?
And like specialty vehicles like that are not really what's causing the problem.
No.
Our weekend cars, you know, are not really what's causing the problem.
No.
You know, it's a much larger scale than that.
Yeah, I mean, look at shipping container emissions. You know, you should be able to go do your once a month race.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's I just have saw, the government
I,
focus
I follow
on
an Instagram that's like, I don't know, ridiculous engines or something. And they just fucking hauled this engine out of a giant, you know, giant building.
Yeah.
And it was like a diesel. It runs on heavy fuel diesel,
yeah.
120 RPM, and it makes 100,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know? And it's for like container ships, basically. And it runs on the dirtiest shit possible.
Yeah. The pistons, the size of
this room.
Room.
Yeah. Yeah,
nuts.
Yeah.
I want to see the machine shop that builds those.
Right?
Like, yeah.
Is it? Yeah, is that Zach's got it?
I was trying to find a list of like, you know, the top 10 companies that are responsible for most of the emissions, but it's like, here, 20 firms make a third of all carbon emissions.
Yeah.
And, you know, the firm is not called SECA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like what would it take to get more people into micro mobility? Is it just the bike? Is it making more lanes? Is it making better vehicles that are more appealing? Is it better sharing economy? What do you think it is?
I think that's a big question. But I know as our brand, we're trying to get people that would normally never think about buying an electric bike onto one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the car guy that, or gal. It's the motorcycle guy or gal. And I think that it's going to be multiple solutions that get more people onto EV micromobility. But it all comes down to infrastructure. If people feel safe, like they do in their car,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be a lot more likely to use it as a true transportation tool, yeah. not just riding down the street to the park or something. We really need to invest in building that infrastructure for these vehicles, kind of like we did when the automobiles took off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's interesting how much we take for granted. You know, I was born in 1981. I imagine you're of a similar...
91?
Yeah. So not, yeah. you know, very few people are left alive that don't take for granted what's been built because of cars.
Yeah.
You know,
our entire country,
our whole country. And even in this city, you know, we had streetcars here and General Motors
went, nope.
General Motors and Firestone Tires got together and bought the streetcar system.
Mm-hmm.
In order for them to buy it, someone had to sell it. So the city government fucking sold out the future. And Firestone Tires at the time was controlled by Howard Hughes. And fuck Howard Hughes. He's a piece of shit. And they said, you know what? We're going to have GM buses on Firestone Tires, and we're going to relay out this whole city around that. And now we're hosed.
Yeah. And I think that we have to think big like that, you know? And it's I care about the environment, and I think that, you know, we need to do our part to make sure it's here for the next generations. But you also have to look at the industry that it creates, you know, mm-hmm. the jobs that it creates. If we're building different infrastructure and thinking about things differently, if we're doing more solar or more renewable energy sources, you know, there's jobs and there's money to be made there. And I think that we need to get behind it quick because the rest of the countries are.
Yeah, no, for sure. Is solar like, if I wanted to take my vintage electric bike on like a van life trip.
Yeah.
Could I charge it effectively off like a consumer grade solar panel?
I charged your bike on the way here on one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is there one on the roof of your van?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's charging the bikes in the back of the van?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so I have a battery bank.
He's got like, was it a Transit or a Sprinter or something? Yeah. It's like a tall boy van.
And the panels aren't even on there, but I took it actually out of my trailer. I have a little moto trailer.
Uh-huh.
And you just throw the panels out. And I do for 2 months, I commuted solely on the sun power. I got a little Goal Zero set up with two panels that unfold out of a bag, set it up during the day when I'm at work. It charges it all the way
up. And that charges your bike all the way during the day?
All the way.
That's fucking
get home at
great.
Night, plug it in. Easy.
That's pretty cool.
And I think that's what micromobility does, is it makes these solutions more attainable.
Yeah, you don't charging a car on solar power is like, oh my God, I don't have 3 days to do this.
Or like 60 grand in solar and battery
right.
backups.
Right,
and,
right.
But on the bike, it's a $15,000 to $2,000 Goal Zero setup, and you can be completely commuting on solar.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be an interesting discussion of convenience, because car customers now are having like more and more gadgets in the car, more autopilot, more radar cruise controls. Like, so cars are getting easier and more comfortable and like cosseting us more, but the vintage electric takes away, or any electric bike takes away, like your cup holders and your radar cruise and all these other things. But a person could probably park closer to work, consume, you know, lower consumables, save money, all the other things. So it'll be interesting to see what people choose, you know, if we're given the right infrastructure, which one they prefer.
And I think people just have at least our customers, they want a visceral experience,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for me, when I ride the bike to work, I show up and I don't need two cups of coffee to go into my board meeting or whatever it might be. I ride that bike to work and I'm awake. I'm, you know, it's cold. I'm seeing sights and smells. Your brain's alert. You have to be on it a little bit. And there's a lot of people that are kind of wanting that.
Well, it's definitely a visceral experience. I mean, like, having just done 5 days of riding 9-bot scooters around, like that's incredible. Like, I was like, to go to a city where there's events all over the town, they're all like a mile and a half apart, and I could charge this thing back up just by plugging it in. We plugged it into the boat, but like it was like an hour and 20 minutes to charge the fucking thing the whole way.
Yeah.
And like have you ever heard of the Breakers? It's like a real famous estate in Newport. It's like one of these giant like Gilded Age Vanderbilt mansions. That's where the concourse was. I literally chained this thing up to the front gate. Like I rode it right up to the front gate, chained it to the fucking front gate of the Breakers. Like, and so there's so many lines of cars waiting to park, and it's like even when you park, you then have to take a shuttle in or walk. So like being able to go from like door to door was brilliant, and I was like, well, this has to be some kind of a future. And with the bikes, it's kind of like that too.
Yeah, yeah. It's just once again, I always say a cheat code for your city, but
yeah,
you ride one for a week, and you're like, wow, I just saved so much time.
Yeah,
if I drive my truck home from work. Well, before the pandemic, but now it's getting worse.
Yeah.
Takes me 25, sometimes 30 minutes to go 8-9 miles.
Right.
My fastest lap time is like 11 minutes home on the bike. And it saves you time, and it gives you that feeling of like, I did something, you know? It gets your brain sharp. You're not just sitting there putting your podcast on, Apple CarPlay, dunk. It's like you're out there and you're getting after it.
And it's visceral. I mean, there are some e-bikes that are not so quick or, you know, not as performance oriented where, okay, it's a functional tool and there's room in the world for that. But this thing fucking rips and it's really, really fun. The only thing that makes me nervous about it is chaining it up somewhere.
Yep.
For, you know, I will chain it up like right outside a restaurant I'm eating at. But I'm nervous.
Your eye's always on it.
It just makes me nervous, especially like I live in Venice. Like I got a really as good a lock as you could get, but it still just makes me nervous because it's like, it's a high value item.
Yeah,
to be left out there.
There's a lot of cool companies working on solutions for tracking, things like that. It is funny though with our customers. Some of them call in and they're like, "This doesn't have that tracking on it, does it?" And I'm like, "No, these don't have tracking."
Oh, but now that you mention it, I'm definitely hiding an AirTag under my seat.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Sure,
so the
dude.
Apple AirTags work great. We have a lot of customers doing that now.
Yeah.
And then also just, we always say, call your insurance company.
Just insure it.
And just get it insured.
Under your homeowners?
Homeowners.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good idea.
You want to make sure that they know it's an electric bike.
Uh-huh.
But just call and, you know, for $10 a month or something.
That's probably a really good idea,
it's just,
actually.
You know,
peace of mind.
If your car gets stolen, you're like, oh no, my
car.
You know, so insuring it.
I insure my watches.
Yeah.
You know, if it goes missing or whatever, I insure that. That's a good idea. I can't believe I haven't actually thought of that before.
Yeah,
that's
I put smart. It on my renter's insurance and
I'm super diehard about the AirTags now too.
They're cool.
I love my AirTags.
Have you seen that video of the guy that sent them all over the world in the mail?
Oh no.
Yeah, and they worked except for South Korea.
my wife called me at like late at night. I was on the East Coast this past weekend, and she goes, "My phone just said that there's been an AirTag. There's an AirTag near me or on me." And it was first tracked at like 9 this morning. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, where have you gone? And she's like, nowhere. She's like, I went to the store and I came back and I didn't put my bag down or anything. And I was like, it's probably like my camera case is just near you or something in the house. And she could not. She kept trying.
Oh, she thought someone had an AirTag.
She thought someone dropped one like on her, like snuck one onto her somewhere. And
weird.
She couldn't, like, her phone was sort of doing some weird stuff where it said, like, there's an AirTag near you that's not yours. And I'm pretty sure it was just my camera case that was still in the house.
I guess you could do that. You could just, like, throw it and...
That was the concern.
There was a concern of some women on TikTok, like, she said, came home from the bar and she found an AirTag in her purse.
Oh.
And it was, like, cautionary tale. So.
Yeah.
Even think... You don't think about it until a weirdo does it.
Right, because you're not evil. We don't think of these things.
Right. And in theory, the alert system that my wife got... is for that.
Yeah.
It's so that if someone does that, your phone picks it up and goes, there's a tracking device on you somewhere.
Yeah.
There wasn't. And so it was a weird thing.
That is weird.
In general, like I've become very pro AirTag.
Yeah.
Aside from the
I mean, you
kind
of just have to lean into the big brother mentality of everything, but you know, it gives you peace of mind when you can track
They already fucking know where I am. I carry my phone everywhere.
I know. Like, people think we're getting a microchip, but it's like...
Please.
You're on Facebook.
Tweeted from my iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't want them tracking me. Sent from my iPhone.
Exactly.
It's like, people are fucking dumb.
Yeah, unless
no
you go back and
scale.
Get a Nokia flip phone.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Our homie uses... You know that Palm is still a company?
I did not.
it's still a company, and they make a phone that is about this big. It's tiny, and it's a touchscreen, actually.
Yeah.
And all it has is calls, texts, and emails.
That's kind of
cool.
And
a very basic, like, web browser. That's it.
Huh.
It's pretty, yeah, it's that one, the Palm PFEG. Yeah, it's tiny.
It's so small. I mean,
it's really
this,
little.
This makes it look like iPhone
size. Is this the Palm Pilot company?
It's the same company, yeah.
Oh, because I saw this.
They have this tiny little phone, and our friend Tom uses it because he
is cantankerous
and hates social media and everything. Little. Having said that, there's an Instagram icon on this one that they're showing, so maybe they
he doesn't use it for that.
Maybe they have
the battery dies
now.
Real fast if you use it for anything else. He used it for GPS for a shoot, and he was like, almost didn't make it.
Oh no,
Andrew, what do you think of like the safety side of e-bikes with the speeds that people can reach on bike paths? Like, do you wear a lot of gear when you ride to work? Do you try to wear a normal helmet?
I always wear a helmet, mm-hmm. And I think that we push the envelopes on top speed, especially compared to European brands. We're allowed to have more power in the U.S., but I think that in my opinion, 30 miles an hour for the bike that we build is the perfect speed. You can pedal a bicycle that fast, but there's a lot of other brands that are bringing out bikes that you can tell haven't been tested and certified for motorcycle speeds, and they're just unleashing them to 60 miles an hour.
Whoa.
And that, I think, is going to be a really big problem. Mm-hmm. That's motorcycle speed.
Yeah.
Crashing, I've crashed a lot of things. Crashing at 30 and even 40 or 50, very different things. So I think that we have to come together, and I hope that we can create some legislation around something a little bit more than just a pedal assist bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's bringing back that 70s moped. And people see what I do, and they're like, oh, that's so innovative. And it's we're really bringing back that 70s style moped.
Yeah.
And I'd really like to see just a bit more of a category for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
But I don't think electric bikes should be going 60 miles an hour. That's a motorcycle.
If I saw someone doing 60 on an electric bike, I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I've gone 60 on our bikes, and it's cool on a smooth parking lot.
In a controlled environment, it's probably fine. But hit a fucking pothole or speed bump or get an altercation with a car. I mean, at 60, you're going a speed that even if in the high 30s, you're going a speed that people who just look at there's a person on a bike,
yep.
They don't expect you to be closing that gap at the pace that you're closing.
Especially up a hill.
Yeah. That's the only thing where I have to be careful when I ride my vintage electric bike is that I have to be aware that if I'm going real fast, relatively speaking, that cars, pedestrians, someone crossing the street that looks twice and they just glance, oh, guy on a bike, and they look away, they don't expect me to already be there by the time they step out into the street sometimes because I'm going a pace that is not expected.
Yeah, I think it's just like any vehicle, if you hop in a brand new Ferrari and you're doing 180, one's gonna, it's you got to be careful with this.
Well, with electric vehicles, there's no sound also.
Yeah.
If you were on a Hayabusa or a sports car,
people
traditional,
hear you.
They hear you, and so their expectations are managed. I think that's one of the good and bad things about fast EVs. If you're in the car, you can drive like a total piece of shit.
And everyone waves and smiles.
And they don't really know because you're not being like offensive. But at the same time, it adds a sense of danger in terms of people's expectations for how long it's going to take you to get from there to there.
Well, also remember when we used to instruct autocross with Gotham Dream Cars,
mm-hmm.
people would shift Ferraris and Lambos at like 3,800 because it would be loud to them and they thought they were going fast.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, you can rev this to 7. And they go, are you serious? But it's that thing, like you're saying, people would hear the sound get louder and they go, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
And on the, electronic bikes or whatever it is, they just go, oh, I'll just go full throttle. This is fun. All of a sudden they're going 30, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for us, on the engineering side, we could build bikes that go that fast, but we've really focused on that low-end acceleration and the hill climbing.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my opinion, that's safer. You can kind of get going with traffic and you're not trying to get it going and cars are flying past you. But then just capping that speed where you're not just doing motorcycle speeds, really.
Yeah, for sure. Have you thought about building an electric motorcycle?
I have.
Have you ridden any of the available ones?
Yeah. I've ridden some of the Zeros and an Alta dirt bike, which mm-hmm. is really cool. But for me, that's kind of the beauty of it, is for me, when I get on, I sold my street bike, but when I get on my motorcycle, I want to go up Highway 9, Skyline, over to Pescadero, and do a full day out of it. And electric motorcycles aren't really there yet.
Yeah.
So if I'm riding an electric motorcycle, I'm going to be riding it around town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, an electric bike that you can ride on the bike path is a better tool to ride around town.
Yeah.
You don't have to be with cars. You don't
have to go full gear.
You don't have to, you know, wear whatever gear you want, but it's, you don't have to be with cars. You can utilize bicycle paths. And so for me, it's really blurring those lines between an electric bike and an electric motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to get a lot more people on two-wheeled vehicles.
You know? We get the Livewire next week. I've never ridden a proper electric motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
And the Livewire is an interesting place to start. You know, Harley Davidson, it's pretty fast from what I hear. And I've heard some say the range is 120 miles. Others say the usable range is more like 80 miles. So I think that's 80 miles is not much for a motorcycle.
No,
I mean, certainly not for one that you're going to take out on a Sunday morning and go
to a place that doesn't have a charge. You don't ride motorcycles for fun to places with charging stations.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think that you have to develop this technology because in the next 5 years, the battery tech's going to be there and you can do a 500-mile ride on your electric motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think they're bad, but I just think for our company, it's that around town MotoGP experience that we're going after.
Yeah, and it works. I mean, it works. That bike, when I ride it, feels like it's ridiculously fast by bike standards. You know what I mean?
You got to put some more miles on the new one.
I can't wait. I can't wait, dude. And thank you so much for upgrading it for me. I really appreciate
that's
that.
That's what we do. We upgrade.
Do we have any questions from the people?
We have a few.
A few?
A few.
Alrighty then. Sam Hyman says, what is the expected life cycle of an e-bike? Is there a need for long-term support for batteries and motors, or is that something the customer really doesn't really need to be concerned with? You addressed this earlier about the serviceability of your bikes, but...
Yeah, so our batteries are rated, depending on the pack, between 1,000 and 1,200 charge cycles. So
that's a lot.
It's a lot. So, you know, you could say that a bike could do 30,000 miles. Really, they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone's telling you that, they're probably lying. But batteries really last about 4 years. And that's what we do as a company is we make sure that when that battery does die in 4 years, we're going to always have a replacement for you. So now we just launched the upgrade that you have on your bike. And we go to our customer's house through our shipping company, pick the bike up from their doorstep.
You did for me.
Yep. Bring it back to our shop, fully refurbish it, put the new drivetrain in, giving some people 100% more range, and then ship it back to them. So after that battery is up, it can come back. And you're not just getting a replacement pack, which you can. You have the option to upgrade to all the technology that's going on our 2022 bikes. But that is something I'd watch out with brands is if you're buying a cheaper electric bike, make sure you're going with a good brand that you think is going to be around for a while, or else you're going to have a heavy electric bike then you can't get a battery for.
That happens. You know what else that happens? Mildly unrelated, but with watches. High-end, smaller brands that do very innovative things, whether it's a totally unique movement or a really cool display, and you're not really sure what's going to happen when it's time to service this thing because they build 50 watches a year, and you know, you just don't know. And a lot of people in the last 10 years have gotten kind of hosed when their brand goes out of business.
Oh no.
You know, and they've spent, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $75,000, $100,000 on a watch, which they could do, and they find out that, oh, sorry, you just cannot get this thing serviced anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. That backwards compatibility is really important.
For sure.
Important.
Christopher loves your bikes, but is worried about people buying very fast e-bikes and, quote, his word, ruining access to trails for class one e-bikes. You see that as being a problem?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we don't build bikes to go off-road. If you want to ride a class one mountain bike trail, go buy a Specialized electric mountain bike. Our bikes are for city streets, getting people out of their cars and around their city differently.
Your bike is not the ideal off-road solution.
No, and on a relatively maintained fire road, they can be a lot of fun. But once again, that's really where a car would be going.
Yeah.
So I agree that some of these fast off-road electric bikes can ruin trail access for people, and we stay out of it. When a customer comes to us, if they want to do that, we'll point them in a different direction. We really build on-road machines.
Who makes a, Specialized make a good off-road bike? Who makes a good dirt electric bike?
If I was looking for an electric mountain bike, Specialized.
Specialized.
Yeah, they use a great drivetrain and a lot better than the Bosch system.
Cool. Mr. Nailhead, were there any technology or lessons learned from the Segway? It was heralded as a revolution, ended up being kind of a joke. It seems like we're in much more of a travel revolution today. So Segway builds those Ninebots. Yep. Segway owns Ninebots. So they Segway is still around, and they make fucking bird scooters, mm-hmm. straight up, and they make a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
Are there any valuable lessons from the Segway? I mean, we have other gyroscopic, I mean, the quote hoverboards that were huge 3 or 4 years ago. That was based on Segway technology. Mm-hmm. And we still have Segway tours in cities. People do Segway tours.
Yeah. I think lesson learned from it is, I think that you always, when we're developing product, you want to make sure there's a use case for it. Mm-hmm. And I think Segway was a little bit early with what they were doing, and they were heavy and cumbersome. For a tour company, it works great. But really, to purchase a Segway and own it and use it, I don't think it was quite at the right time.
Segway seemed like it was going to replace walking,
which
is the problem.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't really a problem with walking.
Yeah.
You know, even a bird scooter goes faster than most people could even run.
Yep.
A bird scooter goes faster than a Segway, for sure.
Yeah.
They go like 15, 18 miles an hour. That's pretty quick. Like, you couldn't really run that fast. And so that's a better solution than the gyroscopic, you know, standing up Segway, I think.
Yeah. But I think that just, you know, that Segway technology is now being used, you know? So you need these people that are just wacky enough to come up with this cool technology. And maybe it didn't work out for that particular vehicle, but we see how that technology is being used in all these different forms now.
Well, like standing units, like one wheels, like Segway technology, like I see people on one wheels, whether it's the sideways skateboard ones or the feet forward on either side of the wheel, like that's the same gyro shit.
Yeah, yeah. But I think all the new ones let you go a little faster than walking pace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My brother-in-law fucking commutes to his job on a one wheel.
So the lesson learned is make him go faster.
Exactly. Yeah. If a Segway went like 40, it would be ripping. Yeah. You ever see people do the off-road Segways? Oh, they're pretty dope, actually.
I think one of the founders of Segway actually died.
Wasn't the founder.
Or an investor.
It was an investor, and he died. The guy who invented it is, I can't remember his name, but they made a documentary about him, and he rules.
He's like a genius.
He's an actual genius. He also invented the Coke machine that makes any flavor you want in the fountain drinks. Same guy. What the fuck?
Dean Kamen.
Yeah. What's the documentary about Dean Kamen?
I want to see it.
It was great.
Well, he invented the wheelchair that goes upstairs, which is super cool.
Well, you take these guys for granted because you see their technology around, but before him, it wasn't even a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And he created it from scratch, which is just so cool.
Wait, Zach, go down. What was the documentary about him, the name? Does it say Dean of, what the fuck was it called? I can't remember, but there's a documentary about him that was just great. I really enjoyed it. It was called Slingshot, 2014. It's on Amazon Prime. I recommend it. It's a very feel-good documentary.
Yeah, and his house, look at this. He has this crazy giant wooden gyroscope.
Yeah, his house is fucking sick.
In the documentary, when you see his house, you go, this is the guy that invents things like gyroscopic stability. It's really cool.
Yeah, this contraption in his house looks like he's turning lead into gold. Looks like an alchemy machine.
Mm-hmm. We need to show the next generation this stuff, where it's like, build stuff and you'll be successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Miguel says, brushless lithium power is incredible, and the only thing standing between someone and a fast e-bike is money. People are going to hurt themselves or someone else on sidewalks and trails and streets. How do you approach this inevitable problem? Wear gear, dude. Wear a helmet.
Yeah, wear a helmet. And then I think just, you know, watching out for pedestrians is a big thing too. And it's really comes down to being smart. And I think there does need to be better legislation because, you know, our bikes are limited to 20 miles an hour on public roads. I'm not going to lie to you. Our customers put race mode in and they ride it. But we need to have classifications that educate people on where a safe place is to be riding this bike. You should not be riding 35 miles an hour on a bicycle path with kids and people walking around. You know, you have to use your brain a little bit,
yeah,
which is sometimes hard for people. But
I don't actually use Mode 5 on the bike path because it is too fucking fast.
Yeah.
It could be really, really dangerous.
Yeah,
people are walking and they could jut out in front of you. It's much safer to use the fast modes when you're forced to ride on the part with cars.
When you're in a bike lane paralleling a road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is really where it should be.
On the
used.
Bike path, if you're going faster than like 22 or 23, it starts to get pretty hairy.
Yeah. And it's, we're going to have, you know, with innovation, there's always a little bit of a messy period where we have to figure out the right ways to kind of legislate these vehicles. But, you know, it's, you can buy GT3 and do almost 200 miles an hour on the freeway. You have to use your brain and not do it because it puts people at risk.
Yeah. Dom Santomieri, what roads do you do development on for the bikes? You mentioned 9 and Skyline and you commute on Guadalupe Trail. Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Do you have any other favorite e-bike roads?
Yeah, there's one in Los Gatos that's perfect. And our bikes have, it measures the temperature of the rear motor, the batteries, all that, and it'll put it in the thermal fold back.
Mm.
And that was the big engineering challenge was, we wanted to get, it's a particular road in Los Gatos that just grinds all the way up and goes to a 15-20% grade. And that road would put our older bikes into fold back. And so that was a big thing for us, was we need to be able to.
The new motor's got to get up this hill.
That, not pedaling once, throttle all the way up. And now you're throttling up, braking into corners. It's like riding a motorcycle. It's
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you for coming down, man.
Of course.
I appreciate it. Thank you for bringing my bike back personally. I'm going to ride it home today. I can't fucking wait. It's
a
beautiful day outside. I will absolutely let you know what I think. VintageElectricBikes.com. What else do you want to plug besides just the website? Social channels? Is it Vintage Electric on Instagram? Yep, Vintage Electric on Instagram.
Yeah,
beautiful photography.
If you have any questions, feel free to call us. We have a team that's there to always pick up the phone. If you have any questions, we pick up the phone and let you know what's going on.
Yeah, the bikes aren't cheap, but they are beautifully made. They're very fast. They're comfortable, and they do have a great customer service team. They pick the bike up or they come to your house and repair stuff, and it's very, very handy. It's really good. I love riding mine around LA. So Andrew Davidge, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
We are off for the rest of the week. Zach and I are both traveling, and we will have a cruise show over the weekend, and I think we've got two shows next week as well, right? Monday, Tuesday next week?
I think so.
I think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lana Shear is coming in, right, with Don Prudhomme? Is that correct? I don't know. We'll get back to you on that. But trust me, we will have much, much more to talk about next week. But thank you for joining us today. Thank you for everyone on our Patreon asking us questions, patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day. Bye.